This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Hello and welcome into episode 284 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Bridget Prue here with Scott McLaughlin. Brian is working, which we forgive him. We forgive him.
I don't. Speak for yourself.
Okay, that's right. I forgot. No one has any allegiances on this podcast anymore.
I think he should completely throw his real job out the window.
And yeah, be completely honest.
Focus on care only about 3 hours of podcasting a week, so.
To be completely honest, I have no idea what his real job is anymore. I don't know. I'm just going to say he's an electrician.
He's designing the Ducks' new jerseys for
their upcoming redesign. Yeah. That's probably why he couldn't tell us what he was doing. No, I have no idea what he does. Anyway, Brian, next podcast, let us know. He used to work in the studio with me at WEI, but you know, now he just sticks with the pod and does, I don't know, plumbing? I don't know. We're coming to you after the Bruins lost in overtime to the Oilers. In a game that, I don't know, Scott, would you say that was like a 58-minute effort that the Bruins won? And then the last two, it kind of slipped. It slipped into a tie, and then you feel like once it goes to 3-on-3 and you see Draisaitl and McDavid on the ice that you're like, this isn't a good position to put yourself in. And of course, on their second shift out there, they score in overtime, and it was a bad overtime again. So we'll talk about all of that. I want to go to your opening shift first because we have some trade deadline rumors that are getting spicy. And this is one that Scott is really excited about. I think that this is a big move. Like when we were talking about categorizing, are they going to stay pat? Or is the team worth investing in? Or is Don Sweeney more likely to make a big move? I would characterize this rumor as a big move. And it includes three teams. So yeah, it's kind of elaborate and it's exciting. So Scott, why don't you get to your opening shift?
Yeah, it's exciting because it's a big name and it's one that we've heard before, and that's Elias Lindholm, who is potentially back on the market. Chris Johnston of The Athletic, TSN, multiple places, reported Tuesday late afternoon that the Canucks are now pursuing Jake Guentzel, who reportedly is expected to be traded by the Penguins, and will certainly be the biggest name out there if he is moved. I hesitate to pick this as an opening shift because this all could happen on Wednesday, and with our luck, it will happen 10 minutes after we finish recording.
I'm leaving leaving Twitter open and just like refreshing it constantly during this podcast.
So, but if you're wondering, how do the Canucks possibly go after Jake Guentzel? They already made their big trade for Elias Lindholm. Well, it's because they could then flip Elias Lindholm to the Bruins, which is the specific team that Chris Johnson mentioned. And, I'll say, like, I'm not excited in the sense that I'm like a huge fan of Elias Lindholm and think he is an amazing player. I think he has some flaws, but he could certainly help this Bruins team. And I would be very curious what the cost to acquire him would be, because it hasn't been a seamless transition to Vancouver. They've tried him in a few, they started with him on the wing, which is not his natural position. They've had him at third line center, and his best seasons, or specifically his best season a couple years ago, was when he had Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk as his wings. And, you know, he elevates his game when he's with better players. Like,
I would love to see like a Zaka Lindholm Pasta line. That is a line that is much improved to what their first or second line, like, or I could say call it a second line, right? If you're calling the Marchand Coyle line, like with the Brest the first line, like that's a great second line with Zaka.
Yeah, I would call that their first line. If technically it would be.
But like we mentioned before, like, you can label either of those whatever you want. It's your other like 1-2 punch of a line.
Yeah. So we'll get into this possibility more. The Canucks gave up a lot to get Lindholm. Like I said, I can't imagine the Bruins would have to give up as much. I feel like the price has decreased, and if Vancouver is desperate enough for Guentzel that, you know, they're ready to move on after just a month, I wouldn't think that you're paying that premium price. Although it will still be pricey for sure. Like you're still gonna have to give up, I would say, at least two valuable assets.
Yeah, this to me reads like they got like this toy, but then there was this other bigger toy that they were like, oh my god, we didn't know it was for sale, and then they're gonna have to take a little bit of a loss on what they paid for him. If they are really desperate for specifically Jake Guentzel, and the only team that's interested in Elias Lindholm from them, and also think about it this way, it's really more about what the Penguins want from the Bruins. If it's a three team deal, it's like, okay, well, what do the Bruins have that the Penguins want to get via, you know, the triangle of this trade? So anyway, I'm excited about this. I told Scott to keep it short and then I extended it. Anyway, mine, which we'll start with, right, because we're talking about the game, is the fact that the Bruins lost another game in overtime and they could not close it out. They had the goal came under 2 minutes left to play. Goalie pulled. Heinen puts the puck off the side of the empty net. And it was like, it was that close. And then it would have been, you know, that's a Bruins win if that goes in. It's 2-0.
Yeah. On a great back check by Ryan Nugent Hopkins.
Yeah, it was. And it was impeded. And it's not like he just missed the net, right? Like he got forced to not take the shot that was like going to be as successful. And also I think got bumped at the same time. So, it's not his fault.
Nugent Hopkins got a stick on it. Like it was a block shot. It was a really great play by Nugent Hopkins.
It was. And so like, you can't blame Heinen for not putting that in, but it's like, it just like kind of symbolizes the so close, but still losing, you're not getting the full 2 points. And so, they end up giving up the goal late. Puck bounces up in the air, goes over Omark's head, goes in the back of the net, and it was a scramble. And I don't know, Scott, I don't think it's easy to blame Omark for that one, but you might have a different opinion. There was just so much going on.
It's a point blank deflection by Draisaitl, and he makes the initial save. It pops off his blocker and goes up over him. Like
you can't see it.
Yeah. You talk about like a game of bounces, like, Nugent Hopkins just gets a stick on Heinen and prevents a close out game, a game clinching goal. Oilers get, you know, a pretty a good play by McDavid and Dreisaitl to connect there, but a fortunate bounce with it going up and over Allmark. And then kind of another fortunate deflection in overtime. Brandon Carlo gets his stick on Dreisaitl's winning shot, but it deflects in past Allmark instead of wide, like when Nugent Hopkins deflects Heinen's shot. It, you know, doesn't totally excuse it. Like, there's still things the Bruins have to clean up. They once again lost two defensive zone faceoffs leading up to both the tying and the winning goal. That continues to be an issue. But
now, not to like sidetrack us back to your opening take, but what's Elias Lindholm's faceoff numbers this year?
Really good. He's like 58%. I looked up specifically defensive zone draws. He is 57.5%, which is, there's 81 forwards in the NHL who have taken at least 200 defensive zone faceoffs. He is seventh best in winning percentage. By the way, Charlie Coyle has taken the most defensive zone faceoffs in the NHL this season. And he's been solid. He's 52.5%, but that's obviously not dominant. And he did lose the key one leading up to the tying goal on Tuesday.
Is that all situations, not just 5-on-5 stats?
Yeah, all situations.
Okay, that makes sense. He plays a lot of time in the D zone on starting PKs and stuff. And he's good at it. Then you should trust him in that situation because he's your best option, I should say. If you're the Bruins, he's your best option. It's pretty clear by the number of times you've used him in that situation. But
yeah, oddly enough, Pavel Zacha is actually better percentage-wise, but they don't use him as much. And it is odd because it feels like Zacha's had more of these key losses late in the game.
Yeah.
But like,
Zacha's there's no stat. Like, what's the, can we get a stat for that?
Yeah, it's you can't really break it down by period. Like, unless I went through box scores, which I'm not going to do. But yeah, Zacha's like 56% on defensive zone faceoffs, which I think would be very surprising to a lot of people just because the couple really bad losses that lead to tying or winning goals stand out.
Yeah. And there's, like you said, there's no way to filter by like importance of like last 5 minutes or, but that I'm sure internally things like that are tracked. But at least they feel like they should be.
Yeah. And one other thing I would just note to people, you're just by nature, you're going to lose more 6-on-5 faceoffs than you win.
Yeah. Like, because when there's an extra guy that can jump
right,
in.
Right. When you have the team that has more guys is always going to win more faceoffs. It's the reason why, you know, the league average on power plays is like 58% on faceoffs because it's 5-on-4 and you have more guys who can come in and help out. Like it.
Yeah.
So it also it does like it anecdotally looks worse, but it also just like statistically is going to be worse.
Yeah. It's also why it's easier to force turnovers when you're on the power play, because you can send two guys to the boards to grab a puck rather than just one, because it's a numbers game in terms of those kind of things. When you have an extra guy, you can be more aggressive. So anyway, we got distracted again. This is going to keep happening. We're just going to end up keeping talking about Elias Lindholm until inevitably we have to come film a supplemental podcast right before I drive to Connecticut.
Right. I was going to say, until we just throw this entire episode out and do squeeze in 12-minute reaction to Elias Lindholm trade.
Yeah, it's going to be its own separate like breaking news podcast, guys. That's what we'll do. If I'm not broadcasting, we'll make Brian do it. What I was saying was where I was at chronologically was Allmark lets the goal in. When we talked to him after the game, someone said, "What did you see on that?" And he goes, "It popped up in the air, and that was the last I saw of the puck. Like I didn't." And it was hard to blame him for that. And so then they give up the goal in overtime to Dreisaitl, and Montgomery like he comes out for his normal press conference after the game, and he says he's, oh no, my alarm.
Who is it? Who is it?
Oh, I'm on the phone with Vancouver right now. hello. Well, what do you need for Elias Lindholm?
Bridget working the phones leading up to the deadline.
Actually, Scott was in the booth or in the press box staring intently into the management booth. Like he's poking me. He's like, Sweeney's texting someone. He's texting. I was like, I don't have binoculars, Scott. I have no idea who he's texting, but you know, he was Sweeney watching yesterday.
I think it was Papagino's. I think they were waiting for their second intermission pizza delivery. Yes,
can you deliver to the ninth floor? Thanks. Well, he got distracted again. Okay, after the game, Montgomery spoke to the media and he said that it was a bad overtime. It was a game they should have won. They didn't close it out in regulation, so they have to try to find a way to win in extra time. And it once again was like, I just want to call their overtime like chaos. Like the best word to describe Bruins overtime this season is just chaos. It's like it could be positive chaos for about 10 seconds. Then it's like right back to, oh crap. Like what the hell is like someone's crashing into someone else, stupid turnover, back pass to no one. Pasta had two turnovers in overtime that were both like, oh God. And
Ullmark tying the puck up when he probably had a chance to move it. And yep. That leads to the defensive zone faceoff, which I will question having Trent Frederick out there to take it. Cause it kind of comes down to like the lack of options. It's on the left side. So ideally you want a left shot taking it. Pavel Zak had just been out for like over a minute, so he's not going to take it. So
yeah,
I guess like by default, Trent Frederick's your best option in that situation, but he loses it. Oilers get possession and then never give it back. Like 30 seconds later, they win the game.
And that's what we talked about. It's a game of possession. It's like when I'm taking my notes, I'm in my overtime notes are 100% just me being like, this is how they one team lost possession, and the other. Because that's really the most important parts. It's like, okay, Pasternak has it, sends a drop pass to Zacha, who just collided with Grizzlick, so no one was there to grab it. Or like, you're just, you know, I'm paying attention to how the possession changes, because a lot of times once you lose possession within 20 seconds, puck could be in the back of your own net. Like, it happens that quickly in overtime with 3-on-3, especially against a team like Edmonton. And I think they would have had an uphill battle in the shootout too, honestly. But basically, once you go to overtime or a shootout against Edmonton, it's like you understand that your chances of winning were much better in regulation. So anyway, it was concerning.
Although facing Stuart Skinner in a shootout, not all that scary. So
yeah, I guess I'm more talking about their sharp.
Well, shooters. when they roll out that top three-man unit that they have of McDavid, Draisaitl, and Evan Bouchard, it's like borderline unguardable. Like, it's amazing that the Bruins survived one shift against them.
I thought that too.
Overtime. Yeah.
There was a drop pass to McDavid, like, into the slot on that first shift, like, from behind the goal line right into the slot, and I don't know how that day. I think it was Carlo made, like, a nice play to break it up. I was like, that's going in, and then luckily never ended up in a shot, but yeah, so you don't want to put yourself in that situation. And it makes you think, like, all right, there's so many times, and not to bring up the playoffs last year again, but I'm going to do it. Like, there are so many times for them to close out that series. So many moments you can think back to. And then every time they have these moments in the regular season, you're like, okay, well, that would have been another time that bit them in the butt, that they didn't just close out the last 2 minutes of the game. Or, like, you let it get to overtime, and then your fate is like you had it controlled for 58 minutes, and then you don't anymore. And in the playoffs, it's not a great method for success. Like, you're not winning playoff series like that. You can't just keep leaving it to chance. And it is concerning. And I think Montgomery has admitted that, like, this is something that they need to work on before playoffs. Like, this is something that, I don't know if he said concerning, but he definitely said, like, is a learning moment kind of thing.
Yeah, so here's a full quote. You've got to find a way to close out a game. Just a great opportunity for us to realize that you can't take anything for granted. Because in a couple of months, it doesn't matter how tired you are at the end of a game, we've got to find a way to push through. We didn't find a way. And, you know, for me, this is a game where I will separate how they played in the third period versus giving up the 6-on-5 goal. Because I thought their third period overall was really good. And when you add that on to how they closed out the Maple Leafs on Monday night, which this is our first podcast since then, way better, way, way better than some of their other blown leads where they fall apart in the third period and they're under siege and they can't get out of their own zone and they're running around and it feels inevitable that there's another goal coming. Like, this was different. Against Toronto, they actually had some sustained offensive zone time and they end up extending the lead and pushing it to 4-1. That part was still kind of missing against Edmonton. I thought they did a really good job structurally in their own zone of, they kept Edmonton to the outside. They only at 5-on-5, Edmonton only had one high danger chance in the third period. Kept them away from the front of the net. I think they got clean clears. They were able to get clean changes. Guys weren't getting stuck out there too long. They weren't icing the puck. So that was all encouraging. Montgomery did say that he thinks that that is kind of where tired legs showed up a little, though. The second night of a back-to-back was they weren't able to get out in transition and they weren't able to kind of keep the pressure up in the offensive zone. They did all the defensive work. They got it out, but then they had to get off the ice and they weren't able to keep pushing forward. So I, you know, overall, just from the last two nights, like I've been Mr. Negative for a couple weeks now. I'm encouraged by these last two games because I didn't know if the Bruins could still play defense like this. They hadn't for several weeks, but this was, they gave up two regulation goals to two of the three best offenses in the NHL. Like that's a good sign, but obviously how it ends Tuesday leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. And you're getting some guys going that weren't going right. Like, DeBrus scores against Toronto. Zacha scores twice against Toronto and once against Edmonton. Like you're getting some guys going that needed to get going. Scoring on the power play. You know, there were positives for sure. And it's funny every time they beat Toronto. I don't know what it is about beating Toronto, but it always just kind of has that little like funny aspect to it because you just know what the reaction on Toronto to you, knowing what the reaction is going to be in Toronto to the Bruins beating the Leafs is what makes it funny every time. And on Canadian TV today, I'm sure the entire morning has been spent being like, you know, never going to beat the Bruins, like just freaking out. Like Razor was saying, he's like on Sunday Skate, he was like, the people in Toronto are afraid of Boston. Like people in Boston don't understand that other franchises around the league are still worried to play Boston. Despite, you know, all the stuff that we've been talking about with some bad losses and some not being able to close out games, like other teams in the league still worry about playing the Bruins. And you saw Toronto deal with that.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeah, and it, you know, they're going to wrap up their regular season series against each other Thursday night at the Garden, but
and they yeah, could it, have like, imagine, different teams. They could have like this is what I was saying before too, like this could be a different Bruins team than last time they were there. And I mean, who knows? There could be no more DeBrus, there could be no more Allmark. They could have Elias Lindholm. They could, who knows? Like it could be a different matchup.
Yeah, but you know, just imagine if the Bruins complete the season sweep, like be four wins in their four meetings. You know, the first two of those did go to overtime in a shootout and the Bruins won both, but yeah, that's your first round matchup right now. And I think, you know, there definitely has to feel like that Bruins boogeyman if you're Toronto and that's how it goes down. But yeah.
Would you travel to Toronto for a playoff series? I'd be tempted to.
I don't know. Get to talk to Odyssey on that.
We'll see. We'll see how this road trip goes, right? And then we'll see if we can do Toronto.
Yeah.
You want to drive with me? You want to drive me for 8.5 hours to Toronto is what I'm trying to say.
I'm not driving to Toronto. So you can do that if you like. I will try to be getting on a plane.
Oh, come on. It's so much fun.
I've done that before. When I was younger, we did a family vacation to, first we did Cooperstown in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Then we did Niagara Falls, Toronto, including Hockey Hall of Fame. And then we did Ottawa too, which I guess was okay. In retrospect, I'm not really sure why Ottawa was a vacation destination, but that made the cut.
Well, I did the same thing. My brother played in Cooperstown. We went up to Niagara and like just over the Canadian border and then back. But that was my first time in Canada, actually. That was a long time ago. Anyway, this is my bad. Sometimes I just distract people and we end up on tangents. Like yesterday I was on a coach's call with Coach McKenzie from UConn, and we ended up having a conversation about one of the girls' motor scooters and the fact that its name is Patricia. And he's like, how did we get here? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry. Probably my fault though. So back on the rails here. I did want to touch on like a little bit from that Toronto game. Because
do you name your car? Like, are you a person who names?
I'm not.
Okay.
I know, but I named
my sister is. That's why I ask. And it seems like more of a not to you know, make generalizations, but it seems like more of a girl thing than a guy thing.
That's funny. I actually don't know anyone that named their car in my family. So, but yeah, no, I don't. What was I saying?
I don't know.
This one was your fault. I was saying that. We have recency bias, so we always end up talking about the most recent game, and this year it kind of feels like it's always a loss recently. So in the second half, at least, and there were some notes that I took from the Toronto game that, like, just worth bringing up quick. Like, good game, another good game for Swayman. He had a great game. Allmark had a good game too. So back-to-back games where both the goalies played well. There was all the speculation that Allmark got traded mid-game because he wasn't on the bench for a little bit.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was pretty funny. And I'm sure Allmark was like, what the hell? Like, what are we doing? But
it was funny, like, if you read, so Fluta Shinzawa was there and talked to him after, and if you read the story, like, Allmark was completely oblivious until someone from Bruins PR told him, like, what was going on, and people were freaking out on social media, and he said, you know, he found it funny, and he was like, yeah, I guess people can speculate, but, but it comes from a place of, like, everyone just kind of being on edge, and obviously Allmark's name has been out there. It's another... Pierre LeBrun has been on this a couple times, but he tweeted again Wednesday morning, just before we started recording, that Devils continue to look at Jacob Markstrom in Calgary, but are also interested in Linus Allmark if they can't get Markstrom. So I have no idea what the percentages are. Like, it still seems like a long shot to me that he gets traded. And, you know, it also seems like a long shot to me that the Bruins get Elias Lindholm, but, like, you could see how there's a connection there if, you know, if the Bruins have to move out salary to bring in Elias Lindholm, who has a $4.85 million cap hit, they need assets to get Elias Lindholm. Well, I don't know. Linus Allmark makes $5 million and presumably gets you one, maybe two premium assets. Like, you can see how those two deals could potentially be connected. So, no real inside info there, but, like, just connecting the dots.
It's like all of a sudden you're convincing yourself there's going to be a four-team trade going on. Like, it's like bouncing everything around. It's like, oh, we can make this work.
I just like for the storylines, like I want to see something huge. It feels like it could be a kind of crazy. I keep going back and forth on what I think this deadline's going to be like, because there's times where it seems like, well, everyone's so cap strapped and it's just going to be too hard for teams to make a lot of deals. Like last year was crazy. I think it was, I don't know if it was the TSN guys. I was listening to something where they're talking about how many trades that there were leading up to last year's deadline. And it was like 12 this day, 10 the next day, 11 on deadline day. And obviously like some of those are much smaller ones, but it's like, yeah, that was a real flurry. And it still hasn't quite taken off. The Vegas gets Anthony Mantha. Like that's a pretty big one. But we're still waiting for like that barrage of trades to come. And part of me does think it's still going to come. And I, you know, don't know when. Pittsburgh apparently wants to have a Gensel deal done by Wednesday night. So that feels like the biggest domino. So maybe that kind of sets things off.
Yeah, we could be waiting for like last year there was flurries and this year there's just an avalanche. Like it just like comes all at once, probably right after we record. But that does transition us well into your opening shift, which would be basically the logistics of an Elias Lindholm trade, the reporting that and what you wrote about yesterday in your article about, because yesterday everyone was just going about their business and then all of a sudden, Scott's writing like 5 articles instead of the normal 2 because it's all this news coming in.
Yeah, well, it was good that I was like already at the Garden when that Lindholm rumor came down, because otherwise I probably would have been driving in. But yeah, I was there early yesterday because the Bruins opened their new Heritage Hall, which opens to the public on Wednesday. They had a grand opening on Tuesday. With some media there, and really, really cool space, like a ton of great artifacts from all across the Bruins' 100-year history, literally going all the way back to like their very first game as a franchise. And then a couple cool like exhibits for kids and stuff. There's like a shooting thing. You can call famous plays from Bruins history. Like you can sit behind a desk. So Bridget, if you feel like you need any practice,
just set me up in there.
If you feel like you're a little rusty play-by-play wise at some point, you can go up there and you can practice some calls. Like people are doing the Bobby Orr goal, they're doing the Bergeron against the Leafs, so that seems like it could be fun for especially for kids. But yeah, it's cool. So we were there for that, caught up with Tuukka Rask a little bit, but then we also got to talk to James Van Riemsdyk before the game because it was his 1,000th game. Then he had the Lindholm rumor. So yeah, just a whole bunch of stuff going on. But with Lindholm though, I will say there was, I forget if this was also Chris Johnson or maybe Darren Dreger reported that they don't think the Canucks are the favorite for Gensel, but they're definitely in on him and being pretty aggressive. And yeah, part of that aggressiveness could clearly potentially benefit the Bruins if they have to turn around and move Lindholm. And, Lindholm's having a little bit of a down year, especially offensively. He's only had 6 points in 14 games since he got to Vancouver. So that sort of all ties into my belief that the price would be lower than what Vancouver paid for him a month ago. You're also getting him for a month less, so that should factor in too.
Yeah, and what would be the cap situation? Well, because they're not going to retain his cap at all. They're not, because they're not able to if they add Gensel. So like,
yeah, so that's why his cap hits $4.85 million. That's why, you know, if you're just doing the numbers, like Linus Ullmark $5 million, there's a pretty natural, fit there salary wise.
Yeah, that would be a big shakeup. That'd be a big time shakeup. And now if that happens, I wonder what Razor we'll say this upcoming week. We really tried to push him on, like, just see if we could get him to budge a little bit about the goalie thing. He was not having it.
Well, he did eventually get to, you know, if it makes you a better team, he's open for it. Now, what exactly?
Well, he also first snarked that if it gets you Connor McDavid, then of course you should do it. And I was like, that's not what we're talking about, Razor. Right.
But yeah, I mean, I certainly think you can make the case that if it's essentially all mark out Elias Lindholm in, and there's probably other pieces, and maybe the Bruins are giving up a, you know, an extra piece or two or whatever. I certainly think you can make the case that makes them a better team. Now it's gonna, it will obviously depend on how Elias Lindholm fits. It hasn't yet been a natural fit in Vancouver. You know, he wasn't putting up great numbers playing with, I'll say, like, lesser line mates than he's used to in Calgary. But to your point earlier, you put him on a line with David Pastrnak, I think he's probably going to do pretty well. Would be my guess. So, you know, but that does line up so naturally. Like, you know, let's, just for the sake of this exercise, say DeBrusk is staying, although he's obviously a name that could also surface if you're talking about a player moving out. But if he stayed, or if you moved him and you brought in some other winger, like, the idea of sliding Zacha to the wing, where I think he can probably get a little more involved offensively. You know, saying that, he does have 3 goals in the last 2 games, so he has finally picked it up offensively here just this week.
Yeah, and he's coming off an injury. Like, they keep alluding to, like, he's not, maybe not 100% right now.
Yeah, but I mean, he got cleared to play a day after the injury, so I guess I'm not super worried about it, but yeah.
My thought is that it's been lingering, and that like, him coming out of the game was just like a symptom of maybe something else that was going on.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there were a couple plays there where you could see where an injury happened, though. Like, there was a little bit of like a knee-on-knee hit, and then he crashed into the board. So who knows? Hard to say. All we get is lower body, and that could be anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But yeah, I like the idea of Zacha, Lindholm, Pastrnak, keep Marchand, Coyle, DeBrusk. I like that third line of Van Riemsdyk, Geeky, Frederick. And then you put Heinen on your fourth line with, you know, say, Bogvist and Brazo or Lauko rotating in. I think Lauko's finally starting to play better and bring in the energy they need him to. So all of a sudden, like, that looks like a pretty strong lineup to me. Like, that's something where I can see that and be like, okay, that can win in the playoffs. Like, if you also have the defense and goaltending behind it, now you're talking. Like, now there aren't the obvious holes that it's felt like there have been at times this season.
Yeah. And so then that kind of gets to what I was saying, which on Sunday, which was, if it makes your team better to add a second line forward, you know, and that's what Elias Lindholm is, who can add to your offense and, you know, maybe get some of the other guys around him going, and not be a liability. Then if you're not going to use two goalies in the playoffs, is it such a huge deal that you like, that's the position where you do have some redundancy. And I wish they could find a way to keep both goalies and get Elias Lindholm, but then like they'd have to do some, you know, some other cap has to go out. So, you know, what are you moving two defensemen that like, are you moving Grizzly and forward out, finding somewhere like to send those guys? You're probably going to have to sweeten the deal for something like that. So, I mean, there's potential for them to do that. They did it last year with Craig Smith. They were able to find a trade partner in Washington that was willing to take on the cap, like his cap, and take him. And
They got Anaheim to take on John Moore's salary. Like, yeah, they've done it before.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like an active, like one of your better players, like with a bigger, like it could be something like that where it's like, okay, maybe we got to move out these two salaries of these guys that just did not pan out, were not worth what we paid them. See if there's some move to be made. Like, will you take this person's salary and we'll give you like a whatever round pick? I don't know. There's all sorts of different ways to maneuver the cap that don't necessarily involve trading Allmark or DeBrusk. Which, by the way, to go on another tangent, I met Mr. DeBrusk yesterday. He was great. He showed up the same time I did.
Louis DeBrusk.
Yes, Louis DeBrusk. He's a broadcaster. Yes, Jake's dad. He's a broadcaster for Sportsnet, right? And he was there covering the team for the Oilers. So he was at the away TV. He didn't know how to get to the ninth floor, so I helped him because there's only one elevator that goes there. He was going to get on the wrong one. I was like, you don't want to do that. So I ended up talking to him and I was like, you got any more of those coupons to use today? Because when he brought out that coupon for the last Oilers game, if you have to get a goal and assist or you have to do 20 pushups, it worked. And so I said, you got another one? And he said, not for today. I'm saving it for the playoffs. So so we'll see. We'll see if he gets, you know, he pulls more of those out. I was also a little bit concerned, not going to lie, if they traded DeBrusk off the team while his dad was in the building, that would have been real bad. And I was like, please don't do that. Please don't.
That'd be rough. Or like, because Louis also came down to the locker room after the game. And I was like, you know, imagine if like something was like happening post game where, you know, Jake's catching up with dad, and then Don's like, Jake, can you come in here for a second?
I was really nervous for a sec. I'm not going to lie. I was like, it crossed.
No, they wouldn't do that, though. Like, people at least have, like, enough awareness and patience to usually avoid awkward situations like that. But, because you mentioned, you know, potentially turning things over to Swayman and riding him if they trade Allmark, we also haven't touched on yet. Elliot Friedman reported that Swayman and the Bruins are discussing an extension. There's been, you could call them reports, I tend to call them more rumors, that something's close. You know, people have thrown out like long term, 8 years, $7 million a year. I haven't seen any concrete reports on that. I have heard that like there's movement, that it's not just, hey, they're talking, they've touched base. I think they're moving together. Like, I think something's going to happen at some point. I just haven't been able to nail down whether it's like imminent, but So it sounds like, which I think we all expected, there was going to be an extension at some point. I don't know if I would have bet that it was going to be 8 years, if that's what it ends up being. That is real long-term, not just, you know, 4 or 5 years, cash in again at, you know, when he's 30 years old type thing. Like, that
8 years seems real long for a goalie. Like, I know it happens, but in terms of like year to year fluctuation and like injuries that can, like, if you think there's several injuries that can take a goalie out that would make their contract, like, you know, not worth what you originally paid for it. But I mean, I like Swayman. I think they should extend him. 8 years is a long time, but that's, I mean, good for Swayman if he can pull that off and he's set. He doesn't have to deal with arbitration again at that point, which he hated. So, so that'd be great for him. And then it'd be a real weird week if it was like Swayman extended, Allmark traded.
By the way, if it did end up being 8 years, $7 million a year, that is the same exact contract Tuukka Rask signed in 2013. And you know, I can hear the Tuukka haters now. I would say that wound up being worth it to me. Like yeah. He was one of the best goalies in the league. That deal ran through 2021. He was one of the best goalies in the league pretty much the entire length of that contract. And $7 million is not what top goalies get paid now. Like the top goalies are somewhere between 8.5 and 10.5. So, you know, there's a gamble on the Bruins side there for it to be that long and for it to even be $7 million. But if Swayman does continue to evolve into like a true number one goalie who can handle, you know, he's never going to get like 65, 70 starts, but can he handle 55? That seems pretty reasonable to me. Then $7 million probably ends up looking like a bargain in just a couple years.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, okay, the prices by the time that you get to year 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, you're like, okay, now the price for a goalie is way more than that. So it ends up evening back out at some point. You're like, okay, well, we have Swayman for this price, and this other goalie that's not as good just got an extension that was way more. And you know, because that's just how money works. The market goes up and up, and so you tie a guy down long term. Like same with Pasternak. That deal sounds huge when he signs for over $11 million a year, but towards the back half of that, it's not going to sound like that crazy, because it's going to be in comparison to guys who got extensions later, and the market was a different price at that time, and there was more money to go around. And so, yeah, that's what happens with those kind of things. Do you have any final thoughts on, by the way, I've just been scrolling Twitter like frantically. I'm very paranoid, but do you have any?
I'm checking my alerts too, but we haven't missed anything so far.
I'm checking my email. I'm checking everything. But I know there are other things to talk about with Elias Lindholm, right? Like you had other thoughts on him, or no? Did you get everything off your chest that was relevant? Because I know you wrote a whole article about it. So,
I don't know. I feel like I got most of it off my chest. Just scroll my article to see if I missed anything, but no, I mean, look, I know his 38 points in 63 games, like doesn't jump out at people, and his offense has gone down since he had the elite wingers of Gaudreau and Tkachuk. You know, to me though, like all that signals is that you just have to know what you're getting in certain situations. Like if you put him with Pasternak, he's probably going to produce. If you put him with DeBrusk and Heinen, or you know, Van Riemsdyk and DeBrusk, he's probably not the kind of player who can lift those guys up and turn that into, you know, an elite second line. He needs some help. That again, if he were the player who had 40 goals, 80 points that year, if he were that consistently and he could do it with any winger, he would be looking at 10 plus million in his next contract. And I don't think he's going to get that. I think his extension is probably going to be more in like the, I'm just guessing, but I'm going to say like 7.5 to 8.5, 9 range. Like I'd be shocked if it gets to 10. And I would say if you trade for him and that's what it ends up being for his extension market, like probably walk away. You probably cut the loss there, because that's another part of it too, right? Is if you are giving up premium assets to get Elias Lindholm, you probably want to sign to an extension, or at least feel like you have a good chance to do that. So you got to have like an idea of what those ballpark numbers are, but you know, look, you got to be willing to spend on any good center. And right now, you know, the Bruins all things considered, aren't spending a whole lot at the center position. So I think you have to be okay with, you know, whether it's 8, 9, whatever, even if it's a slight overpay. You know, there's no guarantee there's going to be any better option out there this summer, whether that's free agency or a trade. So, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And when it comes to high-end centers, like, you are kind of a beggar. So,
yeah. Well, and they were underpaying last year by so much at center because they're getting those team deals for Krejci and Bergeron that they kind of left themselves stuck having to fill, you know, what would normally be, you know, $8+ million positions with, you know, what they already had, and with Matt Patra, who unfortunately got hurt, but he will also be back next year. Let's not, well, as long as he doesn't get moved. And I saw him yesterday. He was up on the 9th floor. He's so funny. He, like, when he, like, moves, he's, like, so, like, awkward. I don't know. He's funny. He's just so, like, new that he's stuff still flusters him up there, I think. But so my thought as well is that Lindholm could, we've been talking about who's the right center to put on the power play, and Lindholm could be a good option on either the first or the second power play unit. Winning the opening draw on the power play is important. And you know, he's an answer for how to get the power play a different look, make it, just try it. Obviously that's going to be tempting for them to put him out there on the power play.
Yeah. I don't know where Vancouver uses him. I do think Calgary used him in the bumper. So we've talked about how, you know, Bruins have been looking for an answer there all season. So definitely that could be another plus. Just like as we're getting ready to wrap up here, trade news, potential trade news, not involving the Bruins. Elliot Friedman just tweeted that, talks between Panthers and Senators involving Vladimir Tarasenko intensifying. So, you know, where I do think that can relate to the Bruins is Florida was also one of the teams rumored to be in on Jake Guentzel. So, you know, if they're going with Tarasenko instead, that would presumably take them out. So I don't know, maybe that, you know, bumps Vancouver up the list or narrows down the options. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I'm just scrolling. That's the only news I've seen since we started recording as well. So, you know what, Scott, we can wrap it up here, but I bet I'll see you again in about an hour.
Right. Yeah. But right? We should tell people. So we're going to plan on doing a deadline reaction episode. You know, unsure of like exact timing of when that's going to be up, but we'll do something after the deadline. Don Sweeney usually meets with the media shortly after the deadline, so probably after that, and then you know, hopefully sometime Friday evening, night, there'll be something in your feed. Certainly I would say by Saturday morning at the latest, but we'll have that, and then of course we will be on Sunday Skate Sunday morning with Razor, 9 to 11 a.m. and yeah, we'll have a lot more reaction to that, to the deadline, as well as, you know, upcoming games, Toronto again, Pittsburgh on Saturday. So lots coming up.
Yeah. And then we go to Montreal.
Indeed.
And we'll probably record from there at some point. Last year when I tried to, my Wi-Fi was shit though. So we'll see how that goes. But drop us a comment of good places to eat, places to drink in Montreal, because when we head up, I already have ideas, but I'm always open to new ones. I have my spots that I go, but I like to try new stuff. So if you got any Montreal suggestions, let us know. We won't be there super long. We do like breweries and craft beer, so just keep that in mind. And poutine.
Of course. Absolutely.
I will not leave without poutine. So that's what I'm going to eat every meal.
When I did a Quebec summer trip a couple years ago, and like did Quebec City too. And I think in the span of 3 days, ate at 3 different poutine places in Quebec City, and was actually almost poutined out by the time I got to Montreal later that week. I think I still did one poutine place in Montreal, but I was like, I should probably eat other stuff. Like, this can't be good.
Poutined out. That just sounds like a weird sentence. That is just a weird phrase. I don't know if we can continue to use that, but yeah. No, I don't. Your body is not happy with you, but your taste buds are. So, you know, you gotta weigh the, it's, you know, not quite beach season yet. We have time to have a little bit of French fries with gravy and cheese.
Although I am going down to Florida later this month for the Bruins.
Oh, that's right.
Too,
so. Sorry, no poutine for you. Gotta get that beach bod ready.
You know what? I'm prioritizing poutine.
Me too. All right. I think that's all we got for now. We're going to make Brian record a breaking news podcast if anything happens in the next, before we go to bed. So, all right. Scott, talk to you soon, probably. Fingers crossed, not till maybe tomorrow. Okay. All right. We're going to say goodbye to everyone. We will have your updates on anything Bruins trade related, and we will talk to you then.